You were listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluids?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about sex and sobriety. I've never done a show about this, but it's such an important topic. In AA and recovery models, sex is left out of the equation often, or it's just not discussed. Or when it is discussed, people go right into this sex addiction model without questioning the very notion of sex as an addiction itself. The American Psychiatric Association does not recognize sex as or sex addiction as a disorder. And the World Health Organization recognizes compulsive sexual behavior. But of course, because you're in the addiction model, people often then jump to sex addiction, which I think leaves out a whole bunch of conversation for people around sexuality and maintaining sobriety. So we are going to get into it. Plus, I also think it's a great thing to talk about, just even if you're not in recovery. I think it's important to talk about the ways in which we might use alcohol to sort of calm ourselves down, to get brave, or because we feel all these feelings during sex that we don't want to feel and we kind of want to numb them. So sober sex is actually for everyone, which is why this is such a great topic. And I've got an expert today. Let me tell you. Stacy Ysidro, founder of Holistic Progressions, has been coaching individuals and couples throughout the United States for over 10 years. Her passion is helping people experience erotic freedom, full self-acceptance, and expression with grace and ease. She most enjoys seeing the transformations in people's sex lives extrapolate into all areas of their lives, creating more pleasure, fulfillment, passion, and peace. Stacy is a master at helping her clients create a sexually satisfying life. She combines sexology education, breathwork, movement, sounding, Zen philosophy, somatic coaching, ancient tantric arts, and shamanism in her coaching to create a unique experience for her clients. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Stacy.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. As I said at the open, my experience has been that people often don't talk about sexuality in recovery spaces. And it feels like it's kind of a big piece to talk about if you're, you know, taking a survey of your life and your relationships. But why do you think it's left out?
Well, I think a lot of times, especially in recovery communities, they're focusing on not using the substance as far as like whether it's drugs or alcohol. And so the main focus of that is to get sober or to get clean. And sexuality is absolutely involved in that. It has something to do with it. And those programs were not designed for sexuality. They were simply created to help people get clean and sober. Mm-hmm. And my experience being in 12-step communities is that sexuality is kind of like this outside issue that people don't really want to talk about. It's something you can talk about with your sponsor, something that comes up in your step work. But as far as being in meetings, there's very few people that actually come out and talk about what that's like. besides that they will say that they have put down a substance and started having sex with everybody. They're refusing to have sex with anybody at all. Okay, you know?
Right. One of the extremes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so yeah, it's there and it's not. So I think it's really important to be able to address that issue in recovery. But just like you said, even people not in recovery that have never had problems with substance abuse, a lot of people associate, you know, having sex with drinking. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they will use substances to kind of override their mind and their bodies in order to step into pleasure, which often creates more harm than good.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I think it's just embedded in our culture, right? You go to bars to meet people, you have a few glasses of wine, and then you have sex. It really is like we're swimming in it. So it's hard to, you know, fight against that. And certainly on college campuses, young people, I mean, I read this great book. I had the authors on several months ago, but basically they were investigating the sexual lives and sexual assault of college students on a campus. And something like 95% of the stories they heard involved alcohol. And I feel like it is seen as a social lubricant. But when we're not sober, we miss stuff in sex.
Yeah, we do. And people, you know, move to substances to get rid of social anxiety or because they're stuck in their head and they can't really be present. They don't have the communication skills to discuss their needs and desires and their boundaries. And you know, when we use a substance to gloss over those things, we often end up feeling unfulfilled and unsatisfied when in the grand scheme, what most people really want is to feel deep connection with their partners and love and acceptance and pleasure. They want to have epic sex. And the very thing that they're using to have sex is ultimately causing them to not enjoy their experience.
Right, right. But then that begs the question, when someone is in recovery from a substance use disorder and they may have been drinking or doing drugs for a really long time, what are some challenges that people you work with face when they have to basically have sex sober for the first time in a long time?
Yeah, it's like a whole new experience. You often feel like a virgin all over again. So in that place, it's kind of cool. But yeah, the challenges that come along with that is that when we've been numbing ourselves for so long, we don't really understand what our turn on is. And there's often a lot of fear around, you know, do I even like the same things that I used to like because I was intoxicated? So do I really like interacting in this way? Are the same things going to work for me that they did before? And so it really, they get stuck in their heads a lot and it creates a lot of anxiety. And ultimately, there's a process that we go through of getting to know yourself all over again. And getting to tune into your body and learn to experience sensation in your body consciously and being fully present.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that people with substance use disorders are checking out of their bodies in some way or having some dissociation or can't feel fully in their body for so many reasons. I mean, so many people disconnect from their bodies during sex, whether it's with drugs and alcohol or not. Lots of reasons to not stay fully in your body. But this relationship with the body, like you have to go back there, right? And kind of start from the beginning. What kinds of things do you recommend for people who are going back to the beginning?
So one of the first processes that I usually take people through is redefining what does sex mean to them and what does orgasm mean to them? Because many people have a limited view of what sex is and what pleasure is. And a lot of times they're operating based on what they have been told through culture, society, or religious beliefs or family things or something that they've seen like on porn. And so they start to realize that all of those things that they used to think were the truth, they are no longer what the truth is to them. So we get to go through this process of redefining what sex is. What is orgasm? When do I want to have sex? When do I not want to have sex? Who is sex okay with? So there's a lot of redefining those topics. And sometimes they've never been defined in the first place. It's like people operate on default, you know? And it's funny because when I explain that to people, they're like, oh, well, this isn't juicy or fun. I'm like, well, actually it kind of is because you get to make your own rules now. You know, you can have orgasms without penetration and without even being touched. So what, you know, what is sex to you? What is orgasm to you? What does that mean? So once we start to really expand those definitions and define what that means, now we have like a fence around the field for us to play in. And when we know where those boundaries are and what those definitions are, we can play all the way to the edges and explore and expand from that space that we start from. It doesn't mean it has to stay that way forever because you're going to grow and shift over time, but you've got to start somewhere.
And I would imagine a really understanding, compassionate, thoughtful partner, if you're partnered, would help.
Yeah, there's communication with your partner, or even if you're single, that's a huge thing. And so we do go through and learn a lot of communication skills around sexuality and just around starting to feel emotions again and learning what sensations feel like in our bodies. I do a lot of embodiment work with people with breathing techniques, sounding, movement. So I recommend that people do embodiment practices. If you have a yoga class or a dance class, even if it's like an ecstatic dance or trance dance movement type class. For me, I love lifting weights and going to the gym. So even stuff like that can be really embodying. It drops you into your body and gets you out of your head. So any practice that you can start to cultivate in your life that starts to bring you back into your body with that movement and breathing is really, really helpful to start to get back in touch with sensation in your body.
So I brought this up in the beginning. The people in my circle, let's just say, are wary of sex addiction as a label. And there's a huge, you know, a huge industry that people are making a lot of money off of sex addiction. And so if you're using an addiction model, it seems like there could be these co-addictions, right? Often people have more than one addiction at the same time. And so I'm wondering what you think about sex addiction. And what if someone is doing drugs, drinking, and also has some kind of compulsive sexual behavior? How do you then address sexuality in that context?
So that is such a super hot topic and has been for a while now. So for me, in my own perspective, the way that I see it is addiction, quote unquote, has to do with compulsive actions or behaviors, compulsive thoughts. It's very self-centered and self-grasping, self-obsessive. And there's also a huge disconnection from any type of spirit. So I mean spirituality, not religion. So whatever that is for people, they get to decide, but there's a spiritual death that occurs in active addiction. And those things to me define addiction. So in essence, I mean, technically, yeah, you could be addicted to anything. You could be addicted to work. You could be addicted to food. You could be addicted to negative thoughts, video games, checking your emails, checking social media, on and on and on and on and on. Right. So that to me is always kind of an interesting conversation to have. I don't really you know, buy into the whole sex addiction thing in and of itself, beyond what I just said, that yes, there's compulsive behavior patterns, you know, there's self-obsession, there's spiritual death going on. Addiction to me is really, it's about seeking outside of yourself for something that you're lacking within. And when we look at like drugs and alcohol, you absolutely develop a physical dependency. And so to me, like you were saying, like if you look at like the DSM-5, they're going to look at that as, you know, you have a physical chemical dependency, or you're, you know, you have a compulsive behavior. So that is a whole nother conversation, but that's pretty much my perspective on it. So I don't like to call anyone an addict or say that they're addicted. Because like I said, what does that even mean? Like, okay, you're addicted to what? To, you know, your work, your, you know, all these different things. So I think it's more about addressing what's really going on. What are you seeking outside of yourself that you really need to find within you? You know, people mm-hmm. are searching for love and acceptance and fulfillment and peace. You know, most people just want to live their lives and be happy. And our culture and society has trained us to constantly seek outside of ourselves to find fulfillment in things. And when we're grasping at all of this stuff and nothing is working, we get to this place of like, what's the point? What does it all mean? You know, why am I here? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like this spiritual death kind of thing. So if someone says, you know, I'm addicted to porn or I'm addicted to phone sex, then I'm going to meet them where they're at and, you know, roll with it. But I've absolutely had people come to me and say that they're addicted to porn or sex. And then within 3 sessions, that's not even an issue anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like there's a lot of shame and guilt associated with that word. And I think that when we get caught up in these labels about, oh, it's addiction, and oh, it's, you know, you're an addict, or oh, you know, you're whatever, we get caught in the label and the meaning of the word, and we don't ever really get to the underlying issue of what's really going on because we're so caught up in these labels. So for me, it's about getting rid of these labels. And let's talk about what's really going on here. Like, what are you seeking outside of yourself? What hole are you trying to fill here?
Right. Besides the obvious, that was a pun. Yeah. Okay. you set me up for it. We're going to take a break and hear from our fabulous sponsors and advertisers who make the show possible. But don't go anywhere. We're going to keep digging into this subject, people. We'll be right back. This year, turn your resolutions into reality with Sakara. Hey, I'm going to be honest. I've been eating like crap during the pandemic. Like me, if you're looking to change your diet, instead of restricting what you eat, what if you nourished your body with the healthiest and most nutritious food? With Sakara, you're putting the best in your body so you can feel your best. Sakara is a nutrition company that focuses on overall wellness, starting with what you eat. Their organic, ready-to-eat meals are made with powerful plant-based ingredients, and they're designed to boost your energy, improve your digestion, and get your skin glowing. The menu of creative, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners changes weekly, so you'll never get bored. And it's delivered fresh anywhere in the United States. I absolutely love the meals. One of my favorites is the Prosperity Pad Thai. It's not your typical pad thai, but it's super fresh with kelp noodles, an Asian lettuce mix, all kinds of good veggies, especially these sweet, crisp sugar snap peas, which really make it for me. Yum. Oh, and the dressing? I would buy it by the bottle. Here's the thing, it did improve my digestion. That isn't just hype. Along with delicious, plant-rich meals, Sakara also offers daily wellness essentials like supplements and herbal teas to support your nutrition. Experience the power of plants as medicine with their best-selling Metabolism Super Powder. Made with organic, raw cacao, it works to boost energy, eliminate bloating, minimize sugar cravings, and reduce fatigue. And right now, Saqqara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to saqqara.com/Tristan. Or you can enter code Tristan at checkout. That's Saqqara, SAKARA.com/Tristan to get 20% off your first order. This is a great thing to try out, and I know you're going to love it. Saqqara.com/Tristan. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with an amazing sex coach, Stacy Isidro, founder of Holistic Progressions. So before the break, we were talking about a little bit about sex addiction. And I think one of my main issues with sex addiction also is just that the treatments are very sex negative and very shaming. So in addition to having to abstain from sex, all kinds of sex, including self-pleasure, there's also, you have to like keep a diary of all your sexual thoughts, and then you have to report them to the group, and then you get to feel bad about yourself. I mean, it's all very, very like shame-based, I think. And I feel like you take a different approach. It's like you take that piece of AA about spirituality. And again, it started with God, but, and so in the old literature, it's God, God, God. But most people in recovery today, any recovery I've been to, it says, you know, a higher power. It's like for you to define. And so you take that nugget and help people go a little bit deeper. I think people don't often think of sex as spiritual or having a spiritual component, but this is like some of the stuff you bring to your work.
Yes, I have a lot of experience with tantra, sacred sexuality, shamanism, and I really do believe that sexual, that orgasmic energy, it is the life force energy that flows through all of us and it makes us alive. I mean, after all, that's how we procreate, right? And when you're in this ecstatic orgasmic state, most people say, oh God, you know, even if they don't believe in God. But it's this feeling of union and ecstatic bliss that is somehow bigger than us or greater than us, or that we're so connected to our partners and it's so deep. And so I really think that sexual orgasmic energy, that's the fastest, deepest download of that cosmic energy that you can get. And I also think that orgasmic energy shows up in all these other areas of our lives. So like when you're doing something that you really love and enjoy, if you like art, or if you like working out, or if you like reading or writing or whatever it is, you kind of get lost in that moment. You know, you can be with your kids and enjoying your kids or your family. Those are those moments when you're really connected and you're really in tune and you're experiencing joy and pleasure. It may not be sexual pleasure, but that's still orgasmic energy flowing through you. And that's part of redefining, you know, what orgasm is and what pleasure is. So we get that in little snippets throughout our lives, but the sexual orgasm and that energy is the most intense and deepest.
So what are some other challenges you feel like people face when they're confronting their addiction, they're confronting drugs and alcohol, but they want to maintain a sexual life that could be with themselves, that could be with other people. What are some things that come up for people?
So again, like going back to that shame piece, that shame and guilt piece, they could feel shame around their sexual expression, or they could be in a pattern or a habit of sexual self-expression. So it, you know, there's a lot of questioning of what am I doing? Like, why am I doing this? Who am I doing this with? You know, that comes up a lot. And again, the lack of confidence and the thinking too much. It could be, you know, about what is this person thinking of me? Because, you know, when most people, when they enter into a recovery program, they're pretty feeling pretty broken. Mm. You're not broken, actually. I'm here to tell you. But you feel like you are, you know, you're like at this, I call it like a spiritual death. And that looks different for everyone. But it's like you're surrendering to this loss of control, and you're surrendering, you know, the powerlessness over, you know, what's going on. So there's a lot that needs to happen around that rebuilding of confidence, rebuilding of self-esteem. Am I deserving of feeling pleasure? Mm-hmm. A lot of people did things in active addiction that they're ashamed of and that they feel bad for and don't know how to fix it, which the step work is great for that. And a lot of that shows up in sex. So, you know, I've done all these things. I'm never going to be able to find a partner that loves and accepts me based on what I've done, or, you know, maybe they like certain things and they haven't been able to share that and they feel guilt or shame around that. So it's a getting to know yourself process and removing a lot of the guilt and shame associated with sex and sexuality and normalizing sex. And we don't get accurate sexual health information growing up a lot of times. So there's a whole process of sex education that happens.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that's a thing that people sort of take for granted, but they shouldn't, which is that so much of sex therapy and of coaching is about going back to the blackboard and saying, you never learned about this stuff. You never learned fully about your body, how it works, how it can bring pleasure. You know, people get shitty sex ed in this country. That's just a fact. And mm-hmm. So sometimes understanding your body is a really important step for people so that they don't feel like, oh, I'm not normal, or I think I always thought this was weird about me, or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. So that is a huge piece. And also too, a lot of the work that I do has to do with removing the charge around stuff. So what I mean by charge is like when we place an overimportance on something. So maybe placing an overimportance on the fact that you like sex and you want to have sex. And then now it's a huge ordeal because now I'm addicted to sex because I like it. And then so it's like this huge charge around wanting to have sex in the first place. And then it becomes a huge issue when it really doesn't have to be, you know? So when we can start to remove the emotional charge around different aspects of sex, it could be when you're supposed to have sex, who you're supposed to have sex with, what you're supposed to like, what you're not supposed to like, then that gives us the freedom to consciously choose from a place of being like grounded and centered and solid in ourselves. We get to be a conscious being of choice and make a decision without all of the emotional baggage.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I think that's one of the parts that you have to reckon with is that underneath a lot of these desires for sex, it's you're actually desiring sex. And it's a stand-in for a bunch of other things, whether that's confidence, value, self-assuredness, connection, feeling close to someone, feeling seen, right? All of that is also in sex.
Yeah. And so that's what, you know, starting with that, what does sex mean to you? What is it for? Sometimes sex can be used for manipulation and control. It can be used for power. It can be used for love and affection. It can be used for simply pleasure. It can be used for spiritual connection. So when you start to kind of see all of the different ways that sexuality is used, then you get to choose, how do I want to be in sex? You know, okay, I learned sex for manipulation totally sucks. Power, you know, being using sex to control someone or being in power, that doesn't work anymore. You know, am I using sex in place of love? Do I think that if someone has sex with me, that they love me? You know, am I getting acceptance and my self-worth and my value through sex? So we start to figure that stuff out and then start to make conscious decisions.
Right. And how do you feel like your experience of being in recovery has helped you help other people?
So for me, I know what it's like to feel powerless. And I know what it's like to continue to do something over and over and over again, knowing that it's killing me. And I know what it's like to be in that really dark place of what's the point? What does anything matter? Why am I here? And not caring whether you live or die. And I know those are really strong words, but anyone that has experienced the depths of addiction, I'm sure can identify on some level with those feelings. And so it's just like the power of, you know, programs. When someone understands what you've been through, it may be a different situation, but they understand the feelings. So just that level of compassion and empathy and understanding, I think, is really powerful. And also getting through it and being that vision of hope for someone, to where I can speak from where I was at and where I am today and what helped me get to where I'm at and the journey that I'm continuing to be on. You know, so having that vision of hope is really, really powerful.
Yeah. And also giving people permission, right? I feel like you're giving people permission to explore this part of themselves and in some cases to wake it up, in some cases to radically shift it, in some cases to sort of unpack it. And when we've gone through that experience, I mean, that really resonates with people.
Yeah, it's really powerful. I mean, if you know, it's kind of like trying to explain what an orgasm is to someone that's never had one.
Right.
And then you can conceptually understand intellectually in your head, but you don't have an actual experience of that. And so, yeah, when you're talking to someone who hasn't been through it, then you can kind of feel like they don't get me. You know, they don't understand. And so when you have that that common thread, then it's really powerful. It's very comforting to know that, like, hey, I'm not alone in this, and I've been through this before. And I've also even worked with people whose partners have had issues with addiction. And so how do they deal with their partners? Because they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So talking to someone besides their partner helps to give them a better understanding of what they're going through and how to support their partner moving through that whole process of coming back into their body again.
Right. And being able to sort of understand that it could be triggering, it could be anxiety provoking, they could feel like they have to perform. I mean, there's all these things that might come up. And if you, as a partner, know that and can, well, really offer space for it and compassion for it, that can make the whole difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all down to communication and compassion and learning to communicate in a compassionate and loving way. One of the tools that I help people go through is the Erotic Blueprint Breakthrough
Yes.
course.
I want to talk about this. Let's take a commercial break.
Sure.
And when we come back, we are going to talk about erotic blueprints. What are they? And how can they help not just folks in recovery, but everyone? Stay with us. Need to unwind after a long day of Zoom calls? Looking for some new self-care ideas? Or maybe you're just looking for a way to get out of a funk and start feeling like yourself again? Reset and reconnect with yourself with Dipsy. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. They release new stories every week, so there's always something more to explore, no matter who you're into or what you're into. Hookups, fantasies, long-term couples, they've got it, and they bring it right to your ear holes. Dipsy also has wellness sessions to help you learn more about yourself, and bedtime stories and soundscapes to help you relax before you drift off. And sleep has finally come to Dipsy. I think this is really great news. They've got a couple features in this department. Sleepovers features popular Dipsy characters speaking directly to listeners to say goodnight and tuck them in. They're meant to feel cozy and comforting while you drift off. Soundscapes feature calming sounds to fall asleep to that are focused on just sounds, no storytelling. No characters, just things like ocean waves and rain. I have personally been using soundscapes to help me sleep forever, probably for more than a decade. Playing these different soothing sounds really, really resets my brain and says, okay, it's time to shut off. It's time to stop thinking and overthinking and just relax. So these soundscapes are a no-brainer for me. I love them. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. That's a 30-day free trial when you go to dipseastories.com/Tristan. dipsystories.com/Tristan. You'll thank me. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today about sex and sobriety with Stacy Isidro, founder of Holistic Progressions. Now, Stacy, you are certified by Jaya, world-renowned sexologist, an old dear friend of mine, God, I've known her forever, as an erotic blueprint coach. So tell me what erotic blueprints are and how they've helped your clients.
Sure. So this is an arousal and pleasure typing system. So if anyone has heard of the five love languages, It's similar to that, but this is for arousal and pleasure. And so why this is important is because you start to learn a language to use to speak into your needs, desires, boundaries. And you really get to know yourself on a deeper level, and you also get to know your partner or potential partner on a deeper level. For me, I originally had started this when I was single, and I will say that it helped me choose better partners. So there are five different blueprints, and they're, I'll just kind of briefly go through them. One of them is energetic. And energetic people are often really sensitive physically and emotionally. They can experience full body energetic orgasm and multiple orgasms, sometimes without being touched. This is also where you find a lot of tantra, sacred sexuality practices. It can be a transformational experience with different states of consciousness. And as their partner's arousal heightens, so does theirs. So those are the superpowers. The shadow side of the energetic can be that sometimes they're really hypersensitive to touch and they'll short circuit and they will disconnect from their bodies. They could get overwhelmed with other people's emotions.
Yes.
Or even with sound, with energy. Touch could feel like pain instead of pleasure. And sometimes the energetics can get a little hierarchical in their view. So thinking that their way is better, it's more spiritual and on and on. So each one has a superpower and a shadow. So what we do is go through each one of these and we start to identify like what is our blueprint, and we're a mixture of all of them usually. And then we start to embrace our superpowers and heal our shadows.
I think I personally, it really resonates with me to have these kind of typing archetypes. of course, we're a combination, and we could, one could be stronger with a certain partner in a certain relationship, right? We can move between them. But I do think like naming these, just like we name attachment styles, love languages, different kinds of non-monogamy, I feel like it's a place for people to start.
Yes. And that's what I mean. It gives you a language. You know,
and we have so few languages in sex, right?
We do. Mm-hmm. And so then there's sensual. Sensuals are like multi-sensory people. They can experience orgasm through all of their senses. They're very attuned to aesthetic beauty. And they like a lot of the massage stuff. Just the smell, the taste, the touching really drops them into their bodies. And sensuals and energetics need to relax in order to step into pleasure. The shadow side of a sensual is that they could really have a hard time getting out of their heads. That's a big thing with sensuals. And sometimes their orgasms are really elusive. So they feel like, oh, it's here. Oh, wait, no, never mind. Oh, it's, nope, never mind. You know, so it's very elusive, and that can be frustrating to them. And they can get distracted by like, you know, oh, the lighting is wrong. The music sucks. I need candles. These sheets aren't clean. The laundry's not done. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's kind of a shadow side there. And then we've got sexuals, and that is kind of your cultural norm here in America. It is, they love sex. Sex is like breathing. It's like water. It's like eating food. They are really fun to play with. They can go from 0 to 60 very quickly. They also just appreciate nudity, genital contact, sexual visuals. And the shadow side of that is that sometimes they could get too focused on the end goal. And so they miss out on all these different ways to experience pleasure. They could feel upset if orgasms don't happen for everyone. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they could be clueless about what their lover needs because they're so performance focused and orgasm focused. And so these sexuals are usually people that say, oh, I'm addicted to porn and I'm addicted to sex. It's because, you know, they do love sex and they do get turned on quickly. And then now they have shame about it. Now they're getting shamed, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. neither one of these blueprints is better or worse than the other. They're all just different. And so when we can embrace where we're at, then we have more acceptance of ourselves and of other people.
And so sexuals, you would say, also have like a high sex drive, or what we call a high sex drive. Okay.
Absolutely. They're fed by frequency.
Yes. Okay. That makes sense.
You know? Yeah. And sometimes I've even seen, and people are like, oh, all men are sexuals. No, they're not. There are absolutely women sexuals. There are any gender in between sexuals. And, I've found that sometimes when you've got, you know, your cisgendered heterosexual male, and they're like a sensual or energetic, that they think there's something wrong with them because they're not behaving like a sexual,
right?
You know,
right.
And I'm like, you're not broken. You just have a different blueprint, and it's epic and amazing.
This is like men who have low libidos feel so much shame, especially if they're partnered and they have a lower libido than their partner. They're like, wait, but I'm supposed to be the man.
Right.
Yeah. But we don't have any other archetypes. We don't have role models for people, you know, who are male, or male identified and are not that sort of that archetype.
Right. And so this is a huge piece with the blueprints is once we realize that, hey, we're a mixture of all of these things. Now I get to, you know, realize that sex is more than just genitals and penetration. Mm-hmm. So now I get an opportunity to explore all of these different ways to experience arousal and pleasure and reach even higher states of orgasm than I did before that I didn't even know were possible.
Yes.
And then I'll just briefly go through these last two here. There's the kinky blueprint, and this is divided into psychological kink and also sensation kink. So kinky, they're very creative. They have a large sexual vocabulary. When shame is absent, they're very good at communication. And they are really easy to turn on when the right buttons are pushed. And sex and orgasm can be a way to access altered states of consciousness, like subspace and even healing. And they may not even need a physical sexual interaction as far as intercourse in order to reach peak erotic states. So there is lots of fun within the kinky realm. And kinky is all about taboo. It's whatever is taboo to you. So if you always have sex with the lights off, doing it with the lights on might be taboo to you. And that could be kinky. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it's not always about, you know, the floggers and the, you know, whips and chains and
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So the shadow side is that people with a strong kink blueprint sometimes do feel a lot of shame. And because maybe they think that they're not supposed to like something or they've been shamed before. Sometimes their specific fantasy or fetish can become their only route to turn on. And sometimes they could have like an energetic or emotional drop after these experiences. So aftercare is really important. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot within the kink realm that you really do need specific training on in order to play safely so that you don't danger, put yourself or your partner in danger. So there's lots of space for education within the kink realm to explore.
I think that's important because we do have a specific association when we say kink and kinky. And you're talking about a much broader interpretation. This is not like yeah. if you are into BDSM, you are a kinky type. It's not that. I right. understand what you're saying. It is much more yeah. expansive than that.
The psychological kink is more about power play dynamics. So that could be like, I want my partner to ravage me, or I want to be in control of my partner and ravage them. Those are power dynamics that you can play in that's really psychological. Mm-hmm. And that could be a huge turn on, you know?
Okay. What's so, the final blueprint?
The I'm last one okay. is shapeshifter. So shapeshifters are a little bit of everything. They are extraordinary lovers and never boring. And they are very fluent in each blueprint. And they are very, they love variety and creativity, which is absolutely amazing. And the shadow side of that could be that they're always molding to fit their partner, that they never really figure out what they want or need or desire to be fully fulfilled. Sometimes they feel frustrated or confused within themselves because they're like, well, what I liked yesterday, I don't like today. And what worked last week doesn't work this week. So now what is it? Their partners could also be frustrated if they don't understand those different blueprints and how shapeshifters will flow between them. So sometimes they will not ask for what they want because they will, one, not know it, or two, they feel like they're too much and they're misunderstood. So they're chronically dissatisfied with sex, which can turn into low libido or not even, you know, wanting to go there. Mm-hmm. So that's again why that communication piece is so important. And some shapeshifters, like, yeah, they'll just float between the blueprints. And some shapeshifters want a little bit of every blueprint in each experience.
Okay, so I think I'm a shapeshifter.
Me too.
Yeah, I feel like I feel most strongly about shapeshifter, but I do feel like I have the dark side of the sensual. Because I yeah, can absolutely. Get in my head, but I can't have elusive orgasms.
Yeah. So you can have primary blueprints and right. you could still have shadows of other ones.
Right. Right.
So absolutely. So then it's about healing the shadow.
Right.
You know?
Right. And then like yeah. for kinky, I feel like I feel super kinky, but I don't need, there are people I know who identify with their kink or their fetish or their turn on. And it's very much like woven into their, like their sexual desire all the time. Like they really mm-hmm. need something to be happening specific for them to get
yeah.
off.
And that's so, technically a fetish, right? A right. fetish by definition is that this is required for my turn on.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell me what you've got coming up in terms of offerings for people. So I'm assuming you will do an erotic blueprint for someone.
Yeah, absolutely. I always bonus people this course with my coaching packages, and we use it as an education piece. And some people just simply want to be coached on that course. So that is something that I offer. I also do some workshops in person and also over Zoom on the blueprints and on other aspects of sexuality. Again, I'm really into the spiritual sexuality and like non-dualism and shamanism stuff. Mm-hmm. So that tends to show up a lot. But anyone that's listening to this, I'm happy to offer a complimentary discovery call with you. And we go through and clarify what your needs are, what are your goals, and we brainstorm on ways to get there and take a look at what's holding you back. And then if we're a good fit to work together and you want to hear about what coaching with me looks like, then I'm happy to share that with you. And if not, I'm going to give you resources and ideas that you can take with you on your journey.
What a potentially transformative experience. Just what you described in the discovery call.
Yeah, like, some discovery calls definitely end in massive shifts and tears yes. and transformation. So that's why I tell people, like, if your call, if any of this landed for you, just reach out to me, send me an email or find me on Instagram at sexcoach_Stacy. And let's just have that call, because that's one of the ways that I am of service to people. So yes, I work with clients, but I also am of service in many ways in my life. And those discovery calls are absolutely a way that I am of service.
I'm just thinking of all the people who maybe have never even considered the question, what are your sexual needs? What are your sexual goals? Just coming to the very question could crack them open.
Yeah, it does. And we get to go through and peel back those layers of what does that mean? Because it usually starts with, you know, I think, you know, that I'm addicted to porn, know, and then as you peel back those layers, what they really want is, you know, maybe deep intimate connection, or they want to be a better lover, or they want to have more frequency of sex, or maybe they're in an adventurous state and they want to try different things. So it's not really about the surface layer. There's always something deeper in there. And that's what I really love, is diving deep into the core of your being. Because sexual exploration and going on this journey through sex coaching is the deepest, most powerful ways for you to experience personal growth and spiritual growth and development in your life. It is one of those last frontiers of personal growth and development. And once you start shifting things in your sex life, it starts to show up in your work and your relationship with your kids, with your friends. People start making more money. They're happier. They have more peace. They have more pleasure. And it's all just because of the sex. And it just extrapolates out all into their life. So it's really exciting.
Well, amen. I want that for everyone. I want to thank you so much for this conversation, for being on the show. I want to remind people how they get to you. The website is holisticprogressions.com. Mm-hmm. Holistic Sex Coach Stacy on Facebook. And Stacy is spelled STACIE. On Instagram, @sexcoach_Stacy. Again, Stacy with an IE. Thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, I want to shout out my engineer and editor, A-Rod, at FTC Designs. Do you want to know who the man behind the editing and engineering of Sex Out Loud is? Maybe you even want to hire him to do your podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at FTC_Designs. Reminder that new episodes go up on podcast platforms on Mondays. I am across all social media platforms at Tristan Taramino, and I hope you've enjoyed this show as much as I have. We'll be right back.